Donate and listen to the podcast at wrwl.org.
Alrighty, we are back, and we're back with the girls from the Alliance Against Human Trafficking, and Jenna Bing, Kathy Gill, Mitz, and Carolyn Kinkoff. And we're going to open the phone lines now at 888-677-9673. And we'd like to keep you on topic, folks. This is, again, the topic tonight right now is human trafficking. So if you want to stay on traffic right now, we may open it up later to others. But right now, it's human trafficking. Stay on topic. 888-677-9673. And so go ahead and pick it up where you left off.
Not sure where I left off, except that there are not prostitutes. Oh, there were sex workers. And sex workers are very small, and they are doing, like, videos of weird things, all for themselves, out of their own apartments. But in most cases, these are people that are being trafficked. You cannot assume that if you see somebody street walking someplace, that they're a prostitute. They are most likely a victim of trafficking. Because they've been forced into it, coerced into it, and under somebody's control.
And it's not long before a single girl that may be prostituting herself is going to be connected and forced to go with a trafficker.
Yeah.
All right. I know some years ago we did some programs. I was the pastor of two brothers that ran the largest. Well, actually, they ran like an insurance ring. What they did is the pimps would have to, if the pimps that ran the prostitutes out there, if they were abusing these prostitutes, they would go to these two brothers. And the two brothers had an organization. They would call the pimps in, and they would have a hearing. And then they would find the pimps and then give them a warning. If the pimps violated again and they found out that they did violate and they abused the whore, then bad things would happen to the pimps. And that was back in those days, and that was right here in Cleveland, very, very common, very complex. Okay, let's go out to New Jersey, and let's go to Bill in New Jersey.
Thank you, Pastor. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I noticed that all the ladies there have a lot of compassion. They're dealing with all types of people, especially females. I'm going to be short. Being a teacher, retired teacher, I ran an after-school program when I was teaching. And there was this girl that, let's call her Maria, just a typical Latino name. So anyway, after a while, she didn't come to the practice. This volleyball practice, it was co-ed. And then I found out years later that she had been abducted and gotten into that trade, and she couldn't get out of it, threatened her kids, threatened her family, everything that you were saying. So either there's no short of evil out there. And I admire you, Pastor, with the week you were out. Your program was run perfectly. And thank you. God bless everybody.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Phil. God bless. Thanks for calling. All right. I guess that's pretty common, what he just said.
Well, the one word I kind of clued in on, though, was abduction. Yes, she probably did disappear, but I don't think it was like an abduction like people think, where they're like grabbed or something. That's what I think of when I think of abduction. In many cases, what they're doing is they've slowly built this relationship with them, and they are isolating them and separating them from their friends, their families. They're getting new friends, doing everything to pull them away from what they know and bring them under the trafficker's control. And then all of a sudden, it's like, that's where they end up. They're now with the trafficker. It may look like they've been abducted, but they've not been. They've been slowly manipulated and groomed to depend completely on the trafficker, all under his control. And many times they pull them completely away from their life that they had. So they have disappeared.
Well, by that definition that you just gave, I knew a situation where a guy married this woman. I knew him very well. He was much older than her. And he immediately moved from Ohio out to Colorado to get her away from, cut her off from all family, all friends. Mm-hmm. He just totally cut her off from anyone. He wanted to keep her totally to himself. virtually almost, you know, locked her up during the day. And so that would be actually kind of like trafficking, wouldn't it?
Well, there's that's probably like more like domestic violence, but there are huge parallels between domestic violence at the beginning stages and trafficking, where they groom them. It's like, I love you, I love you, I think you're wonderful, well, let's get married, all of that. That happens, and they separate them from, in domestic violence situations, they're separating them from their family. Oh, you don't need to go see them. Stay here with me today. Don't go see your family. The same type of separation happens in trafficking. And they go through a breaking phase for both of those, where they have emotional abuse and physical abuse. All of a sudden, the person hits his wife, and she's like, oh, I love you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Same thing could happen with a trafficker. All of a sudden, he hits her. I didn't mean to do that. You just have to do what I say. Don't do that. You know, I won't. I love you. I love you. The difference is somebody doing this with its domestic violence is because they want a wife completely under their control as a husband. A trafficker wants the same kind of manipulation and breaking of this person and isolating them so that he can sell them and make money from them. So early stages, they look a lot alike. And so we actually train police and EMS people that, you know, you get a call and you think it's domestic violence that you're going into. Keep your eyes open because it may not be domestic violence. It may be something bigger than that. It may look like it because she's saying, that's my boyfriend. Yeah, I live here and all this. Yeah, I know he hit me, but he's also, if he could be trafficking her. And so we are training and trying to get people to open their eyes because they can look very similar in certain situations.
All right. We're going to take a call from John, and then I'm going to come back and ask you, okay, so you catch a guy trafficking, yeah. Then what do you do? John, you're in the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Ernie. I have a great question for you folks. I'm really interested in the family, intra-family trafficking among different ages of siblings. Can you give me a typical scenario of how that would play out?
I had a patient once that she was a young girl. She came into the hospital for an evaluation of a physical assault. It ended up that the reason for her physical assault was because they were making fun of her because she was pregnant. She was 11 years old. And her mom wanted the police called. Then when we asked about the pregnancy, mom thought she was 6 weeks along. And mom was real flippant about, so she's pregnant. But for the police, for a minor assault, she was really upset and angry and wanted to follow through with the police, which was kind of unusual. When I talk to her on a one-on-one, we separate the patient from the family, and I was talking to her, asked her how old her boyfriend was, and she said, they aren't my boyfriends. One was 17, one was 15. And we did take care of her and meet all her needs. We called Child Protective Services, we called the police, we did an ultrasound, we connected her with OBGYN. She had an ultrasound done. She was 20 weeks pregnant. She was kind of a chunky monkey, so it was well hidden from, you know, many people. But several weeks later, I was in the Collaborative Den to Human Trafficking, taking a course on Train the Trainer for Human Trafficking. And Sister Ann Victory, who we've talked about before, she said many times the family will allow the child to be trafficked for drugs, and the child may stay dirty so that they aren't attracted to the buyers. And all of a sudden it hit me. I had a case of human trafficking right in front of me, and I was very upset about that because I missed it. She was on a dirty side. She was a young girl, and some girls try and be, you know, 5-10 years older looking. She was not. She was very, very dirty. Mom was very thin, questionable meth mouth going on, where a lot of dental damage was done. She had marks on her arms that were suspicious of possible drug use. And I put it together. Mom was selling her out for drugs. When people are on drugs, they will do anything.
Mm-hmm. How sick is that?
I know my brother runs an orphanage in Mexico, and he was telling me how these drug cartel guys, these gangs, would come in, and you might have a woman that might have three kids, and they'll say, look, you can keep one of them. You can keep one of them, but the other two got to go. And they actually abandon these little kids like you would a puppy or a cat, kitten out there. And then these women, I don't know how you could do it. I couldn't, but they do it just to go. And they figure it's better to save one, I guess. I don't know. But he was telling me how they would pick them up and bring them into their orphanage, and they would raise them up and give them a Christian education. But, and that's what's going on in the world. And of course, in a lot of foreign countries, that's very common.
Carolyn used the word generational, too, because it's not only just, a familial situation where maybe the parents are addicted to drugs and they need the money, so they are selling their children for drugs. But it has been found to be generational that, the mom was trafficked, aunts are trafficked. A family is just, they're just trafficked. And then they reach a certain age, and this is all they've ever known is being trafficked. And so when they reach a certain age and they need something, they can, that's all they know. You traffic your kids. And that's the generational aspect of it. I think that's still small, but it is out there.
I had a situation where I was called to come in and speak on behalf. There was a woman who I had baptized. She was slow. She was slow, and she had a grown daughter. And the daughter, even though the daughter was very pretty, was slow too. The husband was a drug addict. He was an addict, and the situation where both the mother and the daughter were bringing men in there, while the husband's right at home doing his drugs, and. But the situation was so bad because when the woman got arrested, like I said, when she was slow, I was there to say, no, she should not be tried as a competent. She should be, for these charges. One of the questions was, this was right in Cleveland there at the so-called Justice Center, and I was the chaplain there for a while, but they asked her what body of water that was outside the window, and she didn't know. Okay, so that tells you, anyhow.
Yeah.
All right. The phone lines are open, 888-677-9673. Yeah.
Can we talk about demand? This is a business, and if there is no demand, the business falls short and there is nothing, no one to sell the product to. And that is something that I think all of us need to recognize, that people who are buying sex, there's a lot of that going on. They feel it's fairly low risk because only 6% of the people that are buying sex regularly have ever been arrested. So it is not something that they think it's low risk to go out and try and buy sex. These are people that are typically 35 to 55 years of age, have disposable income, because many of them are buying sex weekly or monthly, and it costs. That's a lot of money. And to them, they're just like, this is just guys being guys. And that's not true, because anytime people have studied this, it's usually like 15, maybe 20% of men in the United States have ever purchased sex. And so it is not a common behavior, even though they want to just say, oh, it's just guys being guys. And so this demand needs to stop. We need to teach our children. We need to have the conversations with any guys that we know to stop this. Because in many cases, they may think, oh, well, it's just a girl, and she's willingly doing this, and that's who I texted. She texted back without any problem. It's just, she's really just doing this on her own. And she's not. She's under a trafficker's control. And many times, they're underage, which means that they're basically raping children. And they don't think that. They think they're having sex with somebody that wants to have sex with them. If nothing else, if they're over, you know, age, then it's sexual assault, because these people have been forced or defrauded or coerced into this. So we call them Johns. That makes them like a regular guy. They're not. These are basically people sexually assaulting for their own benefit and paying for it.
All righty. I've got one for you then. What about these cougars? Because I happen to know that there were, I was listening to these guys, these young guys, who sell, you know, they sell themselves to these, what they call cougars. It used to be a cougar was a big old cat. Now they're older women that have still got their looks, okay?
Well, and, you know, we said this. This can be anybody. Men and boys are also trafficked. And that could very well, the cougar may think it's just some guy like, oh, he's really cute and he wants to do this. No, he could be being trafficked himself also.
Well, I've seen where men have been arrested for buying prostitutes, but I've never seen one of these cougars arrested for doing that.
They should be.
They should be.
Well,
they should be, and they don't arrest enough of the guys. And they also then plead it down so that they aren't ever listed as having been a buyer of sex. And that also is wrong. Our justice system needs to say if you were, you know, caught in a sting for attempting to buy sex, that's what this charge is, and it should stick.
Well, you know, with society, the way things changed over the years, now, today you had, it used to be, when I was a kid in school, if a teacher was having sex with one of the students, it was always a male, a man having sex with one of the young girls. That's totally reversed. It's totally reversed. Nowadays, when this is taking place, it's usually female teachers with the young, with boys in the schools. Now, when I was a kid growing up, if you were, and I had a I had a teacher, she was fresh out of college when I was in high school, and she was only about 4 years older than me, and I could have been dating her. But in those days, if a guy was to end up with one of these young teachers, well, it wasn't a crime. All the other guys, the older guys would say, hey, way to go, boy, look at that. You know, you scored big time. It would be different than when a girl, because if the girl got caught with one of the male teachers, he's going to jail, okay?
Right.
No doubt about that. So completely different. But let's go to Carol in New York. Hey, Carol, you're in the air. Hey, Carol.
Hello?
You better speak to me, woman. You're in the air,
yes,
Carol.
I was just wondering, you know, what can the average person do or, you know, the churches can do to, you know, help with this situation?
I'd like to answer that. Be a safe space. So a lot of what we're talking about tonight is it's archaic thinking. We can't victim blame. We can't think of these women as prostitutes or these men or boys or girls as prostitutes. They're human trafficking victims. What we used to think of is of pimp and prostitution, 90% in 2005 or 2003, I believe it was, they did a study. 90% of women who are being prostituted don't want to be in that life. It's pimp controlled. They're human trafficking controlled. And there could be felony convictions for that if they're found guilty. What we can do as a community is we can be a safe space. We cannot victim blame. We can look beneath the surface. You might be the one person, instead of saying, why are you doing this? Say, what happened to you? What can I do to help you? How can I help you? You can make a report to local police or to a local task force and get them the help that they need. Now, understand that some victims don't want to report because they've been groomed and conditioned to be afraid of law enforcement. They're afraid to seek medical treatment. And I can tell you that my daughter, Courtney, I had guardianship of her. She was incompetent. She could not consent. So that's something that a lot of people don't understand. There's so much you can do. You can get involved with local coalitions like ours. We formed the Alliance Against Human Trafficking. There are many coalitions within the state of Ohio. If you go to the Anti-Human Trafficking Ohio Coalition map, you can see us listed there with our contact information. I'm sure several other states have coalitions and task force. Awareness is important. Skills training is important. The churches can bring us in, or organizations like us, to raise awareness so that you know who to reach out to. You know who your resources are, because it really does take a collaborative effort. Because if we don't join together, systems will continue to fail our victims. People will continue to fail these victims unless every single person does their job. And if you see something, say something, know something, do something. But keep in mind, if it's imminent, call 911. You do not want to put yourself at risk or be in imminent danger. Call the local authorities, call the task force. There's so much you can do.
You can also be a support person for a vulnerable family member or friend, neighbor, whoever. If you know of a young person that is very vulnerable and may be going down this path, tell them, I could be your go-to person. You may not want to talk to mom and dad about what's going on, but you can come to me and I will help you out of it.
All right. People are going to want to know how they can get in touch with you, you ladies. So tell them, you might not want to give your phone number out over there. It's up to you if you want to do it. It's on your card here. If not, tell them your website or whatever, how you can get in touch. They can get in touch with you with questions.
The best way to contact us now, we're still working on our website, we just became a nonprofit, is to email us at allianceagainstht@gmail.com.
All right. Say that again.
I sure will. It's allianceagainstht@gmail.com.
All right. Very good, folks. Let's go out to New Jersey. What's going on? Where's California? Where's Texas? Where's Arizona tonight? Let's go back out to New Jersey with Cliff.
Yeah, hello?
Hello, you're in the air.
Yeah, okay. I have two quick questions, I guess. One would be the buyers. Would be would they necessarily be spotted as kind of wise? In other words, they could possibly be people that look from the outside like pillars of society. That would be my first question. My second question is this people, say, coming into America, or is there also an outflow of people, say, to Central America, South America, Canada, Mexico, et cetera?
I'll take the second one first. I would say that in Ohio, and I think across the United States, it actually is homegrown. This is a homegrown crime. These are traffickers working in their own neighborhoods, in their own communities, and they are grooming people in this community, and it is homegrown. Our buyers, they can be everybody. I would say that every occupation has probably been picked up for trafficking, for buying sex at some time or another. Mm-hmm. Athletes, ministers, policemen, businessmen, you name it, they have been picked up.
And you'd hope there'd be more athletes than ministers in that category.
I don't know. There's actually cases where ministers have been traffickers. And so it can happen in many, many different ways, and it can be all the people, all kinds of buyers. But when they do study it, they do find that a lot of times you have to have disposable income for this.
All right, there you go. Let's go. Thanks, Clifford. Let's go out to Michigan. Well, we're going west anyhow. Let's go to Sean in Michigan.
Yes, thank you, John. I'm calling on behalf of our targeted individual, TI. This is a real issue, and it's based through the Patriot Act. Okay, they created a human trafficking scenario. When you are labeled as a terrorist, you are stripped of your civil liberties, and they treat you no matter what they run. Medical, biological, chemical, military-grade direct energy weapons test on you, and it's 300,000 victims in the United States, 2 million worldwide. And there's multiple class action suits. The one you can check right now is on Targeted Justice. That's the website. And it's for $1.3 billion. It's a real situation. So any of your listeners listening, they want to sign up for that lawsuit, class action, at targetedjustice.com. There's multiple sources of CIA whistleblower, Lord David Duncan, the most known one.
Okay, very quickly, very slowly, give that website again so we can maybe check it out for you.
It's one more word, targetedjustice.com.
All right, thanks, Sean. All right, there you go. Well, that's something we can check out there. Listen, phone lines are open nationwide at 888-677-9673. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. I know that a lot of people have mentioned that if the police are aware
of trafficking.
Well, let's go this a little further. Have you found a bunch of cops that are involved into it?
I have not. We actually have a very good police task force set up. It's called the Northeast Ohio Human Trafficking Task Force, and they have policemen. They go from Sandusky all the way to the border in Pennsylvania and cover that area. And the task force is set up specifically to deal with human trafficking. They run their own hotline 24/7. They investigate these trafficking incidents, and they are actually out there fighting this all the time. And so we have a very good police organization set up for this. I know there's been instances where police have done very bad things. And so that's when you do run into police that have been picked up for trafficking. You run into people that are in government that have been picked up for trafficking. Or, I mean, for buying sex, not for trafficking.
I bet you do.
Yeah, I mean, for buying sex, all these people get picked up for buying sex. And they are, police fall into that too.
All right, yeah, very good. All right. 888-677-9673. We have Jenna, Kathy, and Caroline here, and they're going to take your questions. And Caroline, tell them again about how they can contact you.
You can reach us at via our email at allianceagainstht@gmail.com. That's allianceagainstht@gmail.com. And Pastor, I did want to talk a little bit about law enforcement as well. So when my daughter Courtney was missing from the group home here in Ohio, Northeast Ohio, and she was living in abandoned apartments and buildings in Cleveland, from what I understand, there were three law enforcement officers that saw her within 2 weeks of her death, and they didn't understand guardianship. And they knew she was missing, and they reported her back to the agency where I filed the missing person report, and my husband and I were looking with the task force detectives and also the detective at that police station. But sadly, they didn't tell him he never got the messages until the next day. So my daughter actually asked a homicide detective for money because she was poor. She was begging. She was panhandling. She didn't want to come home because she was probably afraid that she'd be arrested or put in the hospital, is my guess, because she didn't reach out to come home yet. She did text me and tell me happy birthday after my birthday. But anyway, she saw this detective, asked him for money. He didn't give her any money, and he just reported her to the agency, and she was found dead a few days later.
What, I mean, did she know he was a detective? Okay.
Well, I'm guessing she knew that it was a police officer because of the neighborhood that she was in. She was at a convenience store, and she felt safe enough to approach him or her. So we did a training. Kathy and Jenna and I partnered with Cleveland State University and trained close to 200 law enforcement agencies because we understand that sometimes police have missed opportunities. And so although our task force is phenomenal, some of the local police departments, not all of them, some are better than others, we felt that they might need a little bit more training to understand what human trafficking mm-hmm. looked like and what to do and how to do interdiction and operations.
So
and
when you approach these police departments, what in general, what is the response? Do you get a positive or negative?
Well, right now we're in the process of going around to all the police departments in Lake County, and which is where our organization is. And I do like 15-minute presentation at the end of their shift or at the beginning of their shift. And we go through very quickly again just to refresh their memory about what human trafficking is and provide them with a card that they can carry with them in their ticket boxes that covers what the Ohio law is, indicators that they can look for, signs, potential red flags that they could look for, and what you do with the victims. And the response that I've gotten from the police has been phenomenal. They are very engaged in these presentations. They are asking questions. They are telling stories about what they have seen. And so they are out there energized to want to deal with this. They know this is a problem, and they want to be able to address it correctly.
Hang tight. We'll be back right after this.
Well, there's people on the left and people on the right, and there's people that's in between. You better hope you're right when you leave this life and bow before the King of Kings. Bow before the King of Kings.
Some say I'm a little bit too far right when I write and sing my song, but on Judgment Day before God's throne, I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong.
You say no one murdered more than Hitler did. Most people would say that's true. But over 50 million babies that were never born might disagree with you. Yeah, they might disagree with you.
Some say I'm a little bit too far right when I write and sing my song. But on Judgment Day before God's throne, I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong. We got a right to feel the way we feel. We got a right to make a stand. And I'm proud to say on my wedding day that my woman was not a man,
a great big ugly man.
Some say I'm a little bit too far right when I write and sing my song, but on Judgment Day before God's throne, I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong. Thank God I'm saved on Judgment Day. I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong.
Yes, I'd rather be right than wrong, folks. I can tell you back, there was a time when any time a man got married, he married a woman, you know? That's the way, there's only two genders. there's a lot of lunacy out there, but there's only two. Anyhow, we're back. Now, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to become a cop, and you ladies are going to train me into finding out, just in case, like, Craig back there gets trafficked. I want to know how to find out and how to set that captive free. So I'm a cop. Train me.
Well, let's give a scenario. So you pull up to a car and their back tail light is out. And so you pull them over like a regular traffic stop. And there's a guy driving and a girl, and they don't look like they belong together. He's dressed one way. She's dressed kind of weird and inappropriate. And so you ask, like you always do, can I see your ID, sir? And he hands or the his ID. And then somebody else comes, another policeman's there, and asks the girl, "So, what's your name, and can I see your ID?" He answers. He says, "You know, her name is this." And he goes, "Ma'am, can I see your ID?" And he either has the ID or else she's like, "I don't have ID." And he has her under control, and she's not going to say anything that he's not going to let her say, because she knows that she will suffer the consequences later. So he goes, and he's like, "Something looks weird here." And he starts looking at all the red flags that could be present in regards to that. She might have physical injuries. He might start seeing some of the tattoos that we've talked about on there, where they've been branded. They're avoiding eye contact. They're refusing to speak to him. They're shrinking into themselves. You know, they don't have any control over anything. They separate them, and they start to have conversations with them. Their policemen are trained now to ask for, "Can I see your cell phones?" And that's the same as, like, "Can I search your car?" And it's amazing, evidently, that if they asked for the cell phone, they hand it to him. And policemen are trained to be able to go through and look and see in, like, the texts. Are there texts about meeting up for dates or sexual things like that? And so if they think that they have somebody that is a victim, they will pull them aside and try and separate them and have a separate conversation with them. And they may not go... they may not be willing to leave at that point. I think that in some cases, if they're injured or show signs of injury, police are, you know, will try to get them to an emergency room for some reason, because emergency rooms are known how to, they know how to deal with this from a forensic standpoint, from a sexual assault nurse examiner standpoint, to go in depth with them and have the conversations that need to be had for the people to start realizing that maybe I'm in a life that I shouldn't be in, and that there is help out there for them. But policemen can and should do things like, "Are you safe? How can I help you?" Not him. "How can I help you?" And to view them as a victim. Assume they're a victim. And that's what we're out there trying to train the police, is to recognize them as a victim. Treat them like any other victim.
It's hard to imagine if a cop out there was to ask people nowadays, "Can I see your cell phone?" that they would volunteer it. My guess, most people would say no. Oh. Do you have a warrant?
That floored me. I even asked the question in this room of 200 people, like, seriously, they do that? And they're like, yeah, they may not let you search their card, but they just hand over their cell phones. And they're allowed by law to ask for it. And so they do it.
Yeah,
But people just do.
Yeah, but if they, I mean, if they refuse, there's really nothing the cops can do about that without having a warrant. You know what you just said reminded me of something. It's not really funny, but you had that road rage thing, and this police officer pulled a car over and had that video cam on him, and the woman in there put her seat back, put her seat all the way back, so all he could see was from her waist down, and he asked her, "Ma'am, set up, and that she didn't want to. Finally, he said, "Ma'am, I'm not going to ask you," and the guy driving said, "What's wrong with you? Set up." It was the cop's wife.
Oh.
It was the guy driving didn't know that. Okay. But he found out in a hurry. And so, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she had told him she was not married. Okay. The question was, how did Courtney change over time? That's a question that we're asking.
Oh, she did. So we talked about not always being able to see red flags, but as her mother, I did see subtle changes. So the first change that I noticed after she met the man she met in the mental health stay, at first it was fun. She had a friend. They had something in common. And then... he pretended to be her protector. He pretended to be somebody saving her. And when I mentioned that he not only groomed her, he groomed us, he would reach out and say, hey, I would like to pick your daughter up. I would like to take her out. And because I had guardianship over her, he was pulling me into the grooming process. And I thought that it was a welcome change, that this was somebody who really cared about my daughter's well-being. But on the flip side, he was being manipulative and controlling and acting one way in front of other people and then behind the scenes being more violent with her. So she physically transformed. When she went missing, it was even more evident. So not only did her mental health decline because the substance use exacerbated the underlying mental health condition, but her physical health declined as well. So when we recovered her from, the first time we recovered her from Detroit, Michigan, when she was missing from June 1st of 2019 until September, when she came home, she looked like a completely different person. Her hair was braided. She didn't have appropriate clothing on. And when I say that, I mean she had like a sweatshirt and shorts and boots in September. She didn't have clothes. I don't know where she was getting her clothing or how she was getting her clothing. I was just happy that she survived. But then when she went missing again the following year, she went missing in April and then was recovered with the help of two police agencies. And it was the only successful police recovery in the history of her going missing between two law enforcement agencies between Ohio and Michigan. She had a wound on her leg. She, had some of those red flags. She didn't seek medical care because she was afraid of going to the hospital. She was afraid of getting in trouble. She was so emaciated and thin that when I took her to get a sexual assault nursing exam, like what Kathy used to do, a forensic exam at a local hospital, they thought she was there for the pediatric ED, the pediatric emergency department, because my 20-something-year-old daughter looked like a 12-year-old child. That's how emaciated and thin and how dirty and depraved she looked. And I showed you a picture before our broadcast of how beautiful she was. When she was being trafficked, she looked like somebody who was homeless. She looked like somebody that people would judge and call names. And truly, she was being victimized, and she wasn't even coherent enough to get out of that situation. When she was well, she looked like my daughter. Even when she was being trafficked, if you didn't know her, you would never know that she was a human trafficking victim. She was trafficked in Lake County, Summit County, out of a nursing home in Ashtabula, because she had overdosed and had dropped foot and needed care there. There was a man, an older man, who came and stayed at the nursing home with her and was trafficking her. I hired a private investigator upon her discharge when she went back to the group home, and the police department, with the help of the investigator, caught that man, and they tried to arrest him and send him back to his home county, and they refused to take him with his warrant because it was something that they weren't interested in recovering him. But he never came back to our county again to see her. So she changed. She just wanted, like I said before, she wanted to be in a relationship. So I always tried to protect her from all of these people who were preying upon her, and I just couldn't. When she was healthy and well and she was taking her psychiatric medication, she looked like my daughter. Even when she was being victimized, she still looked like my daughter. But I did a timeline for one of my PowerPoints, and you can see her transformation over time, just as you can with many victims, sadly.
All righty, let's go and take Steve. Steve's right here in Cleveland. You're in the air, Steve.
Pastor, after 50 years, I don't know if your shows get any better, but it's a shame you got to go through so much pain to learn so much. But I'm just going to call you both moms. You're beyond amazing, and I feel, wow, I feel what you've been saying. I mean, Pastor, you made me feel, understand what the feeling of an abortion is, but now I'm understanding this, and it's like, if there can be women from the school boards, the city councils, or anybody, let them go on a ride or something with the police and really see what goes on, because this is beyond educational, I don't want to use that word, I mean, it's just, it's amazing what these people get away with, because do you think there was the old motorcycle gangs out there that used to be real motorcycle gangs that kind of acted like mobs? They would kind of know who's where, and, I mean, what they would take care of and kind of know how to, some of these pimps, we're going to call them, would just slowly, as China would say, we're going to disappear you. I mean, this is just, I wish we had some Cleveland Police Special Forces for this stuff. I mean, I'm older than I want to be, but this would be such fun to break up and get these people, but the pain that your daughters have to go through, and if they're not there, I don't know if I can stand up and look at some. I mean, it's, you got to be more stronger now than you've ever been in your life, and it's a shame you've had to go through with what you know now. And I just wanted to say God love you and God bless you all. And if there's some people out there that you can really, like, a task force of something, you know? I mean, literally, there are retired special force people out there, people out there that would love to help. And if there's a way that they could do something, even snitches in turn, but there's some people out there that would just love to go out there and just
all right.
have some
I've
fun.
Got to, I've got to move on, Steve, because we're running out of time. So this is going to be the last call. Thanks. We're going to go to Sister Mary. Sister Mary, you're in the air. Sister Mary Grace.
Yes, Greer. We're 300 policemen short in Cleveland. I just want you to know, we don't have a certified constitutional sheriff. And that is my point. Plus, did you ever think that they would be doing it in child protective services?
You know what? That's right. Out there, we did that program out in Oklahoma where 60 children simply disappeared from one of the child protective services, and they said they didn't know what happened to them. They think they all ran away.
Wow.
Isn't that something? Yeah. Yeah.
One boy that was running, and he came out of a home, and he was from a very prominent family. And the point is, that boy ran over the median and almost got hit right on the freeway. And that he was running for something. And I'm telling you, it's in those homes.
I hear you. Mary Grace, God bless. We're out of time. Folks, let me tell you, there's only one answer. The answer to all of this, there's one answer to all of what's happening in this world today, and it's right found right in the book that's got all the answers, God's Word, the Bible. It's called 2 Chronicles 7:14. He's telling you what would take it. God said, he'll fix it. He'll fix it, but the people have to do, they have to be obedient to him. And they have to come, they have to confess their sins. We need revival, and if we would do that and call upon the name of the Lord, then he said he would heal this nation. This nation is cut, and America's bleeding, and she's getting weaker every day. And folks, we got to bring America back to one nation under God, the way God gave her to us. So we're going to close in prayer now for you folks out there listening to us all around the country. God's Word, the Bible, doesn't stutter. It says that it's appointed to all men wants to die, and that's a fact. And then it says the judgment. There's no in between. And if you're out there listening to me tonight, and if you have not called upon the name of the Lord, if you have not prayed to the Father, Jesus said, here's what you do. He did all the heavy lifting. He did it. He took your place, substitutionary death, upon that cross, a horrible death. But he did it, and he gave you an out. And if you call upon the Father and ask for forgiveness of your sins, and then you call upon the name of the Lord Jesus and ask him to be the Lord of your life, all of your life, without any reservations, you've got God's word on it. You will become a new creature, a born-again believer, an heir of the kingdom, and you will be on the road to immortality. You've got God's word on that. And folks, it doesn't get any more sure than God's word. And that's a fact. And so don't run out of tomorrow's tonight. Do it tonight. How much time do I have there, Greg? Pardon? All righty. There you go. All right, ladies, I want to thank you for being here. You've got about 1 minute closing comments.
Real quick, I'd like to give out the local task force number. So the last caller said we should have a task force. We do. It's the Northeast Ohio Human Trafficking Task Force, care of the Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Department. It's a 24/7 number you can call to report suspected human trafficking victimization. And that number is 216-443-6085. That's 216-443-6085. And you can reach Jenna, Kathy, and me, care of our Alliance Against Human Trafficking Gmail, and that is allianceagainstht@gmail.com. Thank you.
I got into this because I could not believe this crime existed and that I knew nothing about it. We are all about building awareness, and that's what we do. And that's why we're here today, is to build people's awareness about what this crime is and how complex it is and how sinister it is. What people can do is anything to coach, mentor, build the self-esteem of vulnerable youth, and spread love and support organizations that are dealing with homelessness and with drugs and with mental health and with all the things that create vulnerabilities that lead people into being manipulated by a trafficker.
Already. What? All right. Kathy got tongue-tied, folks.
Well, I could say for anybody that has young children, educate them the dangers of going on these different apps and the social media. Don't give a lot of information out. That could be very, very dangerous. And never put pictures out there that you can't show to your grandmother.
Alrighty, and you would say make sure children don't have these until they're a proper age. They shouldn't have one of these things. And if they have one, you need to know what's on that, right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, I absolutely need to know what's on that all the time. And so, well, it's been an interesting program. Really quick, give that phone number out one more time.
Oh, my goodness. I should have it on the top of my head. Give me one second.
Here it is.
You got it.
Hang on. Northeast Ohio Regional Human Trafficking Task Force, 216-443-6085. Or actually, the Cleveland Rape Crisis Center has Project STAR, which deals specifically with trafficking victims. And that's 855-431-7827. And they also know how to deal with victims or answer questions in regards to this.
Alrighty, we're at the end of the radio program for tonight. And as we get to this point, every night, right at this time, we say, God bless, good night, and always, always keep fighting the fight.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of the Christian Resistance. What's Right, What's Left, hosted by Pastor Ernie Sanders. To learn more about our ministry, please visit us online at www.wrwl.org. Please tune in next time for another edition of What's Right, What's Left.
The preceding program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries and is responsible for its content.